Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. We're going to be talking with one of the organizers of what's going to be a massive march on Thursday, in all probability, assuming that the cover-up artist, Bill Barr, continues to refuse to allow even Congress to see the Mueller report, much less the American people. Those of you who are regular listeners know that I've written a series of articles over the last month or three about Bill Barr and how back in 1992, he was the attorney general who specifically, when George Herbert Walker Bush was being subpoenaed to turn over his diaries that would have implicated him in Iran-Contra, the illegal sale of weapons to Iran, and perhaps even in the 1980 part of it, in the pre-election part of it, Bill Barr was the guy who said the way to stop this investigation is to pardon Elliot Abrams, to pardon Caspar Weinberger, pardon Ollie North, pardon all these guys. And Bush took his advice and screaming three-line, all-caps headline on the New York Times, December 26, 1992, or maybe 20, it was either Christmas Day or the day after, screaming headline, you know, massive cover-up, right? It was Bill Barr who organized that. This guy is the cover-up guy, right? This is what he does for Republicans. What he's done, in fact, he was covering up for himself. William Safire in 1992, I just retweeted the article, talked about how Bill Barr himself was going to be indicted in this case. And so he got himself out of it as well, because he shut down the investigation. And Lawrence Walsh, who was the special prosecutor, went nuts and said, this is a cover-up. I mean, front page of the New York Times. How quickly we forget, right? So it looks like, I think he's doing the same thing all over again, frankly. And I think his plan is to say, no, I'm not going to give you the report. It was done by the Justice Department. I'm the head of the Justice Department. I can keep it, you know, under lock and key. Congress will subpoena it. He'll refuse the subpoena. It'll go to the courts. However the courts rule, it'll end up before the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court could take up to a year, and you got five right-wing whack-a-doodles on. It may be after the election before we see this thing, if Bill Barr has his way. And the one thing that can blow that up, that didn't happen in 92, the last time Bill Barr tried to do one of these cover-ups and did it successfully, massively. The one thing that can blow that up is if enough people show up in the streets, is if public opinion turns on him, if the American people rise up and say, hell no, we want to know what's going on here. Was our country hijacked by a foreign power? Do we have a president who's not working in the best interest of the United States, but rather working for somebody else? Do we have criminals in the White House? What the hell is going on here? Zet Pacanis is with us. He's on the line. He is the spokesperson for TrumpIsNotAboveTheLaw.org. It's a coalition of other groups, including Move On and People for the American Way and Public Citizen and others. Time to act. The nationwide protests are planned for, I believe, Thursday night. You can tweet Zach at Zach_PETKANAS. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. And I just want to tell people, this is so cool what you guys have done. I just went over, plugged in my zip code here in Portland, Oregon, and boom, you know, Vancouver right across the river, where it is, when it is, 1,100 people signed up, already signed up to say, we will be in the streets. Tell us about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one, I just want to appreciate your intro to this, because I think so many in the mainstream media are getting it wrong about what's happening right now related to this report. You know, you can turn on CNN and even sometimes MSNBC, and it seems like Bill Barr has agreed to release the full report. And that is simply not true. Bill Barr, in every single interview that he's given, every single letter that he's written, every communication with members of Congress, he has said that he refuses to commit to releasing the full report. And what's happening is that we have House Democratic leadership led by Jerry Nadler in the House Judiciary Committee and Adam Schiff, the chairman of the Intelligence Committee. They have given Bill Barr a deadline of tonight, saying that if you do not release this full report and the underlying evidence by tonight, tomorrow we will begin the process to subpoena. And we in the grassroots, the American people, we are going to take to the streets on Thursday if this deadline gets passed tonight. And what people can do is there are two ways to figure out where a protest is near you. One is to go to the website, TrumpIsNotAboveTheLaw.org. And as you say, people can go and put in their zip code and find an event near them. The events are going to happen around 5 o'clock local time. There'll be some leeway, probably about half an hour on either side, depending on the location. But you put in your zip code, you RSVP for an event, and then you'll start getting communications from the host about exactly where it is, when it is, what to bring with you. There are over 200 events that are currently scheduled. There are more being added every single day as people find out about it and start hosting them in their own locations. But we need a real show of force to tell Bill Barr and to tell the Trump administration that it is not acceptable for them to redact a single word of the Mueller report. And we're going to go out on the streets on Thursday and we're going to tell them that nationwide.
Amen.
Amen, brother. I mean, this is so important, because this guy successfully covered up Iran-Contra, which may well have been like Nixon blowing up the LBJ's peace talks in 1968. You know, the president of Iran, Bonnie Sauter, President Bonnie Sauter, who now lives in the United States, who was president in 1980, is on the record. I mean, there's a piece in the Christian Science Monitor about how the Reagan administration, actually, this was part of their plan. They had the Iranians hold the hostages so that Jimmy Carter couldn't win re-election. Major crimes committed by the Reagan administration. And George Herbert Walker Bush had to cover this up. He had to put a cover on it because he was involved in this stuff. And he brought in Bill Barr to do it. And now Trump is in a similar situation, major crimes, or at least, you know, it looks like it. And he brought in Bill Barr to be the cleanup guy.
That's exactly right. I mean, he is Mr. Cover-Up. And you just have to look at the letters that he put out so far. You know, the Mueller report, we know, is close to 400 pages long. So what does Bill Barr do, Mr. Cover-Up? He puts out a letter that's a summary of 4 pages long that puts the best possible spin on it for the Trump administration. You know, it defines collusion so narrowly that it probably would exclude Vladimir Putin from the definition. You know, but it's silent on things like non-criminal evidence of collusion, like the Trump Tower meeting that senior Trump campaign officials had with Russian spies, the secret real estate deal that with the Kremlin that Donald Trump was pursuing during the 2016 election. Paul Manafort, the campaign chairman, giving internal strategy memos to Russian military intelligence, or Roger Stone acting as a conduit with WikiLeaks at the behest of the Trump campaign. None of this is covered in Bill Barr's summary. It is absolutely covered in the Mueller report, and that is why you are seeing the Trump administration and Donald Trump today on Twitter, you know, talking about how, you know, initially he said, oh yeah, let it all out. I want it all to be out there in public. Now, when it looks like some of it actually may come out, he's changed his tune, and he's saying he doesn't want it to come out and attacking the Democrats for calling for the information to come out. There is a reason why Bill Barr is slow-walking this report coming out. There's a reason why the Trump administration is attacking the Democrats for calling for the full report of this report. This report is bad for the Trump administration, and they are going to hide it until we go out there and demand it, which is why people need to go to TrumpIsNotAboveTheLaw.org to find a protest near you.
In 1992, one of the most respected journalists and op-ed writers in America was a guy named William Safire. He has since passed away, but I'm an old fart. I used to read his stuff. It was brilliant. And I'm looking at an article that he wrote in the New York Times in 1992, just a couple of sentences from it. Barr's strategy, he was the attorney general, has been to stall past December 15 when the law authorizing the independent counsel expires. Republicans recently filibustered its extension to death. And then he goes on, but the cover-up general, this is how he referred to Bill Barr. He called him the cover-up general. This is William Safire. But the cover-up general may be overlooking the Senate's understanding of its prerogatives. If the Senate Judiciary's official call is rejected, Chairman Joe Biden is prepared to consult with Chairman Boren. And he goes on through this whole thing. You know, Joe Biden was trying to stop this thing and couldn't stop it. I mean, it's just this guy, Bill Barr, knows what he is doing. He knows how to hide the crimes committed by Republicans. He has done it before. He is doing it again. And we need to be in the streets on Thursday. If the entire report is not released to Jerry Nadler and Adam Schiff tonight, we need to be in the streets on Thursday. Trump is not above the law.org is the website.
Yeah. Can I also just say one thing? If people text Mueller, M-U-E-L-L-E-R, Mueller, to 21333, they'll get information about how to sign up for a protest. That's Mueller to 21333.
Great. And is there a Twitter handle?
Just the website, because it's run by a lot of organizations. So you should go to the website or text the number.
Okay. And the number again to text the word Mueller, M-U-E-L-L-E-R, to was again?
It is 21333.
21333. Great. Zach, you're doing God's work. I really appreciate it. And thank you for coming on the program and talking to us about it. And good luck.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Keep us up to date on how it all goes.
Absolutely. See you guys Thursday.
Thank you. Yep. Talk to you before then, I hope. Zach Pacanis, who is the spokesperson for Trump, is not above the law.org. Check it out.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. We'll be right back.
Today we're reading from Ralph Nader's Breaking Through Power. It's easier than we think. This is from page 74, the chapter How the System is Rigged. According to Russell Mokaber, editor of the Corporate Crime Reporter, quote, corporate crime takes far more lives, causes far more injuries and diseases, and steals far more money than street crime. But the vast amount of law enforcement resources, mass media attention, and prison cell blocks are devoted only to street crime. Just consider these preventable casualties. Almost 60,000 annual workplace-related fatalities from both disease and trauma. 54,000 deaths a year from air pollution. Over 100,000 lives lost as a result of medical malpractice. Nearly 100,000 lives lost from hospital-induced infections. Over 100,000 fatalities from adverse effects of drugs. And over 40,000 deaths every year due to inadequate or no health care coverage for diagnosis, treatment, and medication. There are far larger numbers of sicknesses and injuries attached to these data sets. These statistics have haunting human faces. Children, women, men, and families destroyed by uncontrollable, monetized minds. Whether they are caused by recklessness, criminal negligence, or worse, the key factors in common are the preventability of such pain and the suffering inflicted from commercially induced neglect, predation, manslaughter, and homicide. By comparison, street and home homicides do not exceed 14,000 lives lost annually. Now see how companies have made sure they have the laws that they need to go after you and how they make sure that the law can be used as their punisher. The giant multi-tiered home mortgage business, now driven by the same one percenters who profited from crashing the economy in 2008, can nail you if you misrepresent information on your mortgage application. Suppose you say you're going to occupy your house as a principal residence to get a lower interest rate and down payment, and you don't for some reason. Lenders can call the loan and demand repayment if the mortgage balance is outstanding. Absent that payment, the lender can seize your home, foreclosure. In addition, by claiming you committed bank fraud, these companies can use the FBI against you. As the veteran housing columnist Kenneth R. Harvey warned, this can trigger severe financial penalties, prosecution, and prison time for ordinary Americans. But how many bankers feel the cold metal of handcuffs tighten on their wrists when their crimes rob American families of their homes and life savings? Health insurance companies have similar supporting laws to deny medical coverage by alleging illegal activities.
This could mean anything from non-disclosure of traffic violations to gun accidents, even when there has been no conviction. It could mean something as vague as hazardous behavior, according to the New York Times. If a company paid you and comes back for their money, they can get you prosecuted for fraud. These corporate Goliaths are too big to fail, and they know how to enact laws to make sure that you are too small to stop them. Corporate state culture, the plutocracy oligarchy, is given an astonishing exoneration, so long as it claims that violence and mayhem are not their direct purpose, but an unfortunate byproduct that just couldn't be helped. Like when innocent people are accidentally killed by U.S. drone attacks, the government seems to quietly get a free pass. It's almost as if corporations get away with a permanent defense of an institutional insanity, a defense going global in terms of deadly supply chains, from horrific African mines to dangerous factories in China, India, and Bangladesh. Deoxygenation and poisoning of the vast oceans, estuaries, rivers, and lakes. Upping greenhouse gases into rapid climate destabilization. Extending the range of infectious diseases due to habitat and ecological disruption and desecration. And changing the nature of nature itself through unregulated genetic engineering and nanotechnology. Even with 6 million slow, agonizing deaths a year globally attributed to the tobacco business, cigarettes are still demonically promoted by one percenters who reap staggering profits from selling their addictive and poisonous product, especially in developing nations where regulations protecting children do not exist. The excuse is forever that corporatists have no intention, knowledge, or reason to do harmful things. The institutional insanity defense, again. Or the manufacturers of weapons of mass destruction, whose militant advertisements say they are just helping the national defense, but are not at all responsible for their product's use in the coercive policies of empire and perpetual war. Is it institutional madness or infantilism? In the 2012 U.S. presidential campaign, Republican nominee Mitt Romney asked about corporate personhood, replied that it was a given, saying, "Hey, corporations are people, my friend," like it was a science fact he learned in fifth grade. This is no mere throwaway line. Billions of dollars of litigating, advertising, marketing, and corporatist commentary have been focused on driving this people image into our minds from childhood. Regularly, full-page ads show that Goliath corporations like Walmart or Lockheed Martin are just people like you. The ads are filled with pictures and names of the faithful workers who bring you goods and services. The book by Ralph Nader, Breaking Through Power. If you're like me, then safeguarding your money through market downturns is a clear priority. And frankly, we've seen enough market volatility to make any investor nervous. For people like us who think outside the box and read between the lines, it's becoming even more clear that the insider secret of accumulating physical gold is becoming a lot less of a secret and more of a trend. According to the World Gold Council, in 2018 alone, central bank gold purchases increased by over 74%. The bottom line is that we are starting to see the cracks forming in our economy. And the faster you take action, the better your opportunity. There's only one company I personally recommend in this industry, and that's the expert strategists at ITM Trading. They specialize in wealth protection and opportunity positioning. Both, as you know, are imperative in our current economic climate. Call my friends at ITM Trading at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. Ask for their free gold protection guide and hedge your bets like the top 1% do. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD. So CNN reporting 1 in 8 Americans borrowed money to pay for health care last year. 65 million Americans are in debt as a consequence of this. Nearly 25% cut spending to afford care and medicine. 76% of people expect their costs to go up in the next 2 years. 7 in 10, 70% of Americans lack confidence in our leaders. That would be across the board. Monday, the Supreme Court said that you have no constitutional right to die a painless death at the hands of the state. This is absolutely bizarre. The Eighth Amendment, I believe it is, bans cruel and unusual punishment. Putting people to death in a way that causes extraordinary pain and agony, I don't know any other definition of cruel and unusual. And yet the right wingers on the Supreme Court have come out and said, "Oh, no, 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 this is fine. Somebody's twisting in pain because of these god-awful drugs that they're shooting them up with or whatever. That's no problem." This is all very, very weird. Lawrence in St. Paul, Minnesota, listening on AM 950. Hey, Lawrence, what's up?
Right on point. But I would like to add, we might be witnessing the disillusion of the Democratic Party. I'll tell you why. You were just talking about this in your last segment, that the Republicans, they are at war. Now, whether you believe it or not, they are definitely at war. Some of the followers on the Republican side, they want a race war. Lee Atwater, he said, I want to take the government so small that you can drown it in the bathtub.
Yeah, that was Grover Norquist, but yeah, I'm with you.
So these are all tenets of war. They know how to wage war, and this is why the Democrats will lose, because the Democrats got a great strategy, a strategy of providing health care, a strategy of making income inequality go away, but they don't have any technical advantages. The first thing you do in war is cut off your opponent's ability to wage war. And this is how you do that, Tom. Unless you cut off the listeners of Fox, you have to cut them down, and you got to eliminate them, or else you would never gain a tactical advantage. But how do you cut them off? You cut them off by educating them. That's the irony of this whole thing. You yeah. must educate them.
Yeah.
And I'll let you comment on that.
No, I think you're absolutely right, Lawrence. And it's a brilliant analysis. And in fact, I would take it a step beyond that. I would say not only are the Republicans waging war, and not only have they read Sun Tzu like you apparently have, but where this kicked off was during the Reagan administration when he declared war on organized labor, because, you know, a third of America had a union job. And the principal supporters of the Democratic Party back at that time were the unions. That was the principal financial support for the Democratic Party. The Republicans are getting their money from Wall Street and from the big banks and from the National Association of Manufacturers and the Chamber of Commerce and all this kind of stuff. And the Democrats were getting their money out of the unions. And Reagan destroyed the unions. You know, union membership in the private sector is down to 6% now. It was over 30% when Reagan came into office. So they cut the funding to the Democratic Party. And I would say that the way to cut funding to the Republican Party is to pass strong legislation that gets money out of politics. And some of that is going to require a constitutional amendment, because the right-wingers in the Supreme Court with Citizens United have said, no, this is a constitutional right of a billionaire to own a politician. But you're absolutely right, Lawrence. And the Republicans are waging war and the Democrats are trying to govern. And there's a difference. Thank you, Lawrence.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You see, the GOP has no interest in governing. They never have. They never will. They just want to tear things down. They want to destroy this country, and which they're doing right now. Regina in Olympia Fields, Illinois. Hey, Regina. Thanks for listening to Chicago's Progressive Talk. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to make two quick points. Conservatives are not going to win this one. Back in Nixon's day, we thought presidents were presidential, but now we know that Trump is a known liar as of today 9,451 times. So knowing that he's a liar and having all this information out there about his lying, I don't think he's going to win that one. And number two, as far as winning the war, we have some Xena warrior princesses out here right now, like AOC. We're waging war. Maybe men are not waging war against the cons, but women are fired up and ready to go. Health care is a very important issue for our families, and we're not going to just take this land down. So
I get it, Regina, but here's the situation. You've got about a third of Americans who are getting their news from Fox News, these committed Republicans, and they literally do not know that Donald Trump lies at, you know, typically a dozen times a day and has lied, you know, over 9,000 documented lies. They don't know the history of this. They are going to be spoon-fed. And you've got another probably 15 million Americans who listen to right-wing talk radio every single day. Actually, the number's probably much larger than that. And they're being spoon-fed this story that, hey, the Republicans have got this great new health care plan, and as soon as the political noise settles down after the election, they're going to roll it out and put it into place. So just trust us, and we'll make this thing happen. And then you've got about another third of Americans who are so busy working two and three jobs because of the Reagan Republican destruction of the American middle class, they don't have the time to even watch the news, much less pay attention to nuance like, you know, whose health care plan is better and what, you know, is there even really one there? And so I'm concerned, Regina, that this is a discussion and a debate that's happening largely within the left-wing bubble, as it were, progressive blogs and among the intelligentsia, people who actually read the op-ed sections of the New York Times and Washington Post, which is a very small number of people, actually. You know, he's going to get away with it.
Well, I don't think so, because what's happening is there's more of us than them right now. And so I do think that health care is a major issue, and we know this guy lies. And as far as all the Republicans out there, I mean, they're going to vote Republican no matter what happens anyway.
Yeah.
And we know we fought a civil war. So those same people that fought the for the Confederacy is going to always be with us. We can't focus so much on them as it is moving up and increasing our ranks. And I know we're out here right now. There's an election, you know, local elections, and everybody's talking about it. So,
good.
You know, if we can keep talking about it, and women in general, especially black women like my group of people, we're really into the whole angry black woman thing.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
We're getting angry now.
Yeah.
And so if we can rise up and vote in droves, even some of the women who traditionally have not been so vocal, they spend their time watching Jerry Springer, we're beginning a whole effort to knock on their doors and say, listen, wake up. So I think that, you know, we're riled up. Now, that's all I can say as far as the population of people that I, you know, I'm a black woman, so I'm, you know, we're fired up.
And God bless you. And I hope that you're right. I really, I truly do. Regina, thank you so much for the call. And thanks for listening to WCPT. Judy in Pine, Colorado. Hey, Judy, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind?
Republicans are completely going to get away with it. We have a news media that supports all their lies by not putting out the facts. And we have the Democrats that refuse to impeach Donald to start the process. And they have been helping him all along. They support him in overthrowing Venezuela. They support him in prosecuting Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. They supported Israel with the BDS law that bans freedom of speech for the BDS movement. Democrats are helping Donald all along.
You mean by not fighting him more aggressively?
Are completely rigged. Republicans own the computer program that count the votes. Democrats do not have a clue. They do not understand anything, and they just continue the same garbage.
I think that is changing, Judy. I would not have strongly disagreed with you a couple of years ago, and I've been doing this show for 15 years, maybe 16 now, but I really think that that's changing. I think that people are waking up. I think that the Democrats are starting to fight back. I think AOC is one of the real warriors in that crusade. The Democratic Progressive Caucus has picked up the challenge. We're going to have Pramila Jayapal on. She is absolutely one of the warriors in Congress. I'm not sure that they're going to get away with it, but I'm very concerned. I'm genuinely very concerned. Judy, thank you for the call. Denise in Chicago. Hey, Denise, what's up?
Thank you for all the fabulous work you do and information. I am concerned because the Koch brothers have been found out funding one of the mayoral candidates. We only have two. It will be a black woman. And I am so concerned. No one has talked about it. It was mentioned by a reputable station, WBEZ. It was reported on. And then it went quiet. Yeah. I am so concerned.
Denise, that's it's entirely possible that it went quiet because it's not real. You know, that's the kind of essentially slur against it, because you've got two progressive Democrats running against each other in Chicago for mayor, as a, in addition to being black women, if my understanding is correct. Is it not, Denise?
Yes.
Yeah. So yes. It may be. I mean, let's be careful about repeating what may be disinformation or even destructive information on the radio. I honestly have no knowledge of it, but if you can find a specific source or something like that, you know, call back and we can talk about it. But I just don't want to go there right now. David in Woodland Hills, California. David?
It's not just the Republican Party. One of the best things Jefferson Smith said last week was, this is organized money's war on democracy, and that's worldwide.
You're absolutely right.
Fox News. Fox News is worldwide.
Yeah, in fact, there's a fascinating article in the Sydney Morning Herald that was written by Kevin Rudd, who is the former Prime Minister of Australia. And the title of the article is The Cancer on Australian Democracy. And the cancer that he's referring to specifically was Rupert Murdoch. He said Rupert Murdoch owns more than 50% of all the newspapers in Australia today. In his article, Kevin Rudd, the former Prime Minister of Australia, says that Rupert Murdoch isn't just a billionaire and isn't just a media figure. He basically runs a political movement. And that movement captured the conservative part of Australian politics, and that Murdoch moved to the UK and bought the Times of London and bought a whole bunch of different media outlets, the Sun and all these things in the UK. And then he destroyed British politics, you know, supporting Thatcher and the whole, you know, the right-wingification, the privatization of everything from the railroads on down in the UK. And then he moved to the United States, became a US citizen, started Fox News, bought the New York Post, bought the Wall Street Journal, and is doing this to the United States. And it's like a billionaire. He's a billionaire, and he's programming Fox News to cause average working people, average and low-income people, which is, you know, a lot of the viewers of Fox News, right? Poor people in red states, to cause them to think that whatever's best for the billionaires is the best thing for them. And it's absolutely crazy when you think about it, but that's, people are buying this stuff. And I think you're absolutely right, David, and Jefferson was right too. By the way, I don't know if I explicitly thanked Jefferson yesterday for filling in for me. I'm not sure that I did. Jefferson, if you're listening, thanks so much. You did a great job. I've gotten so much great feedback. I really appreciate it. You know, Louise and I just got back from Mexico, and we took a week's vacation with my brother and his family, but it was also a week that I could finish up writing this book on voting that I've been working on. And while we were there, my brother and sister-in-law rented a house that we all shared, and it had, you know, a Wi-Fi that was kind of public Wi-Fi. And, you know, going to town, there's public Wi-Fi. At the airport, there's public Wi-Fi. Pretty much everywhere I was, I didn't know, you know, whether it was secure or not, but I was not concerned because Louise and I both use ExpressVPN. I have it on my iPhone. I have it on my computer. Louise has it on her laptop. I have it on my laptop. She has it on her iPad. ExpressVPN, it's one click. It secures and anonymizes your internet browsing. In fact, when we were in Mexico, it would have looked to any website pretty much like we were in the United States because the ExpressVPN apparently was just dropping our data and, you know, encrypted from where we were in Mexico right into the United States, you know, into a main pipeline and completely safe, completely secure. With ExpressVPN, I can surf any Wi-Fi without worrying about my personal data being stolen. And it's less than $7 a month. For less than $7 a month, you can get the same protection that Louise and I have. And ExpressVPN has been rated the number one VPN service by TechRadar. It comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. You can protect your online activity now and get 3 months free at expressvpn.com/Tom, T-H-O-M. That's expressvpn.com/THOM for 3 months free with a one-year package. This is a product. I love endorsing this product. I actually use it. ExpressVPN is something you should have. Visit expressvpn.com/Tom, T-H-O-M, to learn more. And thanks for supporting our program.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Denise in Richmond, California. Hey, Denise, thanks for listening to TuneIn.
Hi, Tom. Hey, listen, I got four ideas here that I think Dems need to concentrate on. Hmm? One is to come up with a regulation to define what's news and what's entertainment, for them to specifically target supposed news. And so I guess the FCC and involved journalists to come up with some ideas for that. Instead of Fox News to be considered news, it should be entertainment.
Yeah, here's the problem with that, Denise. If we give the power to government to determine how a news media identifies itself or what they say, and that government gets fully taken over by Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell and their buddies in the House, you know, with Kevin McCarthy, and then they decide that, for example, this program or Amy Goodman's Democracy Now!, which I think is the best newscast in the United States right now, they decide that because we have a left-wing bias, we're not news. I'm really concerned about that.
Well, no, the reason why I was saying to include journalists, they themselves come up with the idea. But the thing is to determine news to be newsworthy, that has at least three resources, just like you have for newspapers and stuff.
Yeah, well, it depends on the paper. Typically, typically a double source.
But I'm just saying, but to have the journalists, to have them.
Sure, have the industry police itself. I have no problem with that, with the industry policing itself.
Yeah.
Although even then, you know, here's my concern, Denise. There's a difference in my mind between journalism and acts of journalism, or between professional journalists, people who go to college, they study journalism, they become professional journalists, they are, quote, credentialed and all that kind of stuff, or they work for, you know, the Washington Post or the local newspaper, and there's no doubt that that person's a journalist. On the other hand, what if a blogger, you know, who's posting blogs at opednews.com, you know, that will basically has a large variety of folks, it's very easy to get a blog posted over at opednews.com, a progressive blog, and it's a great site. It's run by a good friend of mine, Rob Call. And what if a person, just an individual who's never done any other kind of journalism, discovers some incredible story, you know, knows some whistleblower inside the government or something, posts that on Op-Ed News, and, you know, so they have committed an act of journalism, but none of the, quote, self-policing news organizations, you know, Google, Facebook, the Associated Press, the New York Times, none of them will pick it up. None of them will even refer to it because that person is not officially a journalist. I think that we need to protect, we need to protect acts of journalism rather than just journalists.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying there. But what I'm trying to do is somehow, some way, that was just kind of an idea, but somehow, some way, we need to regulate false information that Fox News is disclosed. And so the reason why I'm saying this is because I was looking on Facebook, and this guy, he says, I hope Trump repeals Obamacare because my insurance already comes from Affordable Care Act. Now, that person obviously is listening to Fox News. He's wearing a Make America Great hat.
Yeah, these
now,
are
that concerns me. That really concerns me. So somehow, some way, we need to come up with something. That was just an idea. Okay, the second thought I was thinking is revise the emulsion clause. We need to have something that fine-tunes that, locks it in there, so that all of our presidents won't have the same issue again. We need to not keep revisiting
to clarify the emoluments clause of the Constitution through legislation. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm with you.
Okay, and then revise the general attorney's job description. Exactly what's happening with Barr is unacceptable.
Yeah.
For him to step in to make a decision on for the Congress to submit a stupid letter, a memo of four pages.
Well, the problem here, Denise, is that during the Watergate era, they passed legislation to create a separate office of a special prosecutor or an investigator. I forget exactly what the phrase that they used, but what Archibald Cox was, and then later what Ken Starr was. And that person was independent, legally independent of the Justice Department. So, and their job was to deliver their report to Congress. So they were created let me finish the thought. They were created by Congress, and they reported to Congress. The Republicans didn't like that law, and they were always trying to get rid of it. And then when that law was used in Ken Starr case against Bill Clinton, the Democrats also didn't like that law. And so they got together and they said, let's kill off this law. So when it came time to investigate Trump, there was no legal structure that was responsible to report to Congress. And the Republicans were not going to create one because they controlled Congress when Trump was elected. So what happened was the Justice Department, in response to public demand for an investigation, created their own special counsel or independent counsel or whatever Mueller's official title is, as a person operating inside the Justice Department. As such, he's an employee of the Attorney General. And so he reports to the Attorney General, not to Congress. So what all we have to do is get back that independent counsel law that we used to have, because right now Bill Barr is completely within his power to say, you know, this report was done in my department by one of my underlings, which Robert Mueller actually is, and I'm going to choose not to release it. And frankly, I don't think he's going to release it before the next election. Danny in Bow, Washington. Hey, Danny, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Before I get to that question, I just want to say one thing about Biden, seeing that that's the topic. I think because of the Me Too movement and all of the progress that has been made in such a very short time, I think a lot of this is just going to have to be kind of a birthing pain kind of a thing, because the magnifying glass is going to be focused on so many different places that didn't normally get focused on. And so I have a feeling that, you know, Mr. Biden is completely competent. Otherwise, Obama wouldn't have picked him. And so I think we're just going to have to go through this.
Yeah.
Personally, I would like to have a woman president. I think it's time.
I'm with you.
But aside from that, my question is about Barr and the deadline. And there's actually two questions, but I have a feeling both of the questions will have the same answer. What happens if he refuses to do this.
The Congress will subpoena the, and they're going to have a vote, actually, the Judiciary Committee on Wednesday on a subpoena. They're going to subpoena the report. And my guess is, since Barr is a professional cover-up artist, he did this for George Herbert Walker Bush and for Ronald Reagan. He's the guy who covered up Iran-Contra for them. That's why Trump brought him in. My guess is he'll refuse to respond to the subpoena. Then Congress will try to enforce the subpoena by taking it to the courts. It'll end up before the Supreme Court. It could take a year or more. It could be the litigation process doesn't resolve itself until after the 2020 election, which in my opinion is exactly what Barr and Trump want. And I'm very concerned that that's exactly what they're going to get. So, Danny, that's what I think is going on. I sure hope I'm wrong, and I sure hope that Congress can pry this thing out, or that some good person inside the Justice Department or inside Barr's organization will leak it, or that Mueller will respond to a request from Congress to come in and testify, and he will basically lay out the findings on his own. We will see. White supremacist terrorists have killed more Americans than any other terror group since the late 90s. And I would say probably since the 70s, white extremist terrorists have killed more Americans than any other terror group in the United States. You may have to pull 9/11 out of that equation as an anomaly. I don't think so now, if you look at it in this larger arc. Therefore, Donald Trump and the Trump White House today pulled the plug and said, that's it, no more in the Department of Homeland Security, no more working group, essentially, on domestic terrorism. DHS's domestic terror unit eliminated by the Trump administration because, quote, it is not a priority. Right. Randy in Ottawa, Iowa. Hey, Randy, thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hey, Tom. Long time since I've talked to you. As far as Joe Biden, many times in the past 15 years, well, 10 years maybe, I've noticed that empathy or that closeness with other people just in casual meetings with Mr. Biden. And I think that's just part of his personality, and it could be a problem for some and not a problem for others.
Right.
But I don't think he's the candidate of the future, but I love him. And I had one other point that I wanted, well, really two, but and that is asbestos poisoning, isn't it?
Yeah, my father died from mesothelioma.
I want you to, if you could, PBS NewsHour, The Stunning Truth About Asbestos Use in the U.S., and it's on YouTube. It's a 10-minute thing, and the last minute will shock you. It's about importation of asbestos from Russia.
Oh, yeah, and this brand of asbestos that's somehow associated with Donald Trump.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's got his picture painted on the bundles of it that are being exported.
Right.
Trump's picture, approved by Donald Trump.
Right. Yeah, it's bizarre.
So at any rate, that was my main point. And are you familiar with an Arlie Russell Hochschild?
I'm not.
You're not. She wrote a book called Stranger in Their Own Land. She's a sociologist.
Mm-hmm.
And I've caught some of her PBS snippets on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the great ones is Why Louisiana Blames the Government, Not Corporations, for Pollution Problems. Mm-hmm. And you are familiar with the Friday night show, Bill Maher.
Yeah, I'll be on his show in June.
Right, about getting out of the blue bubble and getting into the red bubble.
Yeah.
Well, that's what she did, exactly what she did. She was a blue Democrat who'd lived in the blue bubble for all her life in California, and she went to Louisiana to try and understand the difference between what the bubbles were all about and the sociology behind it.
Right.
And she really kicked butt.
Yeah.
She did good.
I'm guessing a large chunk of those bubbles, Randy, has to do with media. The local talk radio in Louisiana, the ubiquity of Fox News, you know, and the local diner and the local truck stop and local hotels. And, you know, I mean, I've seen that myself going to red states. Even in the hotel lobbies, they'll have Fox News on.
Yep. Why red states depend on distrust of the government to stay in business.
Yeah. And mistrust and fear and outrage are the currency of Fox News and right-wing hate radio. They're literally the currency of it. Randy, thanks for the heads up and the information. It's always nice to hear from you. Hey, thanks so much for listening to our podcast. One of our sponsors is the X Chair. And I got to tell you, they've got this new thing, dynamic variable lumbar support. They call it DVL. The X Chair's DVL is really designed to adjust for you. I mean, you know, the average chair, maybe it goes up and down, right? This thing really is totally customizable. Whether you're 5'2 and 110 pounds or 6'4 and 250, the X Chair actually will adapt itself to you. And now with the introduction of the X Basic model, there's an X Chair for every body type and every budget. Take advantage of the X Chair's new financing option too. Pay as little as $30 a month. So take your comfort and productivity to the next level for less than the cost of a daily cup of coffee. And X Chair is also on sale now for $100 off. So just go to XChairTom, T-H-O-M, XChairTom.com, XChairTom, or call 1-844-4-X-CHAIR. Comes with a 30-day no-questions-asked guarantee of complete satisfaction. And if you use the code XWHEELS over at XChairTom.com now, you'll also receive a free set of the new X-Wheels with your chair. That's XChairTom, T-H-O-M, XChairTom.com.
Hi, for the Tom Hartman University Book Club today, we're reading from The Crash of 2016, which might happen, we'll see, but it's coming. This is from Chapter 5. Chapter 5 is titled Reagan Kidnapped the Jetsons. In a 1966 article, Time magazine looked toward the future and what the rise of automation would mean for average working Americans. It concluded, quote, by 2000, the machines will be producing so much that everyone in the U.S. will, in effect, be independently wealthy. With government benefits, even non-working families will have, by one estimate, an annual income of $30,000 to $40,000. How to use leisure meaningfully will be a major problem. End of quote. And that was $30,000 to $40,000 in 1966 dollars, which would roughly be $199,000 to $260,000 in 2010 dollars. Ask anybody who was a teenager or older in the 1960s, this was a big sales pitch for automation and the coming computer age. There was even a cartoon show about it, The Jetsons, and everybody looked forward to the day when increased productivity from robots, computers, and automation would translate into fewer hours worked or more pay or both for every American worker. And there was good logic behind the idea. The premise was simple. With better technology, companies would become more efficient. They'd be able to make more things in less time. Revenues would skyrocket, and Americans would bring home higher and higher paychecks, all the while working fewer and fewer hours. So by the year 2000, according to Time magazine in 1966, we would enter what was then referred to as the leisure society. Futurists speculated that the biggest problem facing America in that Jetsons future of the year 2000 would be just how the heck everyone would use all their extra leisure time. And, of course, there were also those who worried about what kind of degeneracy would emerge when a nation has lots of money and free time on its hands. Neither happened, and it didn't happen because Ronald Reagan stole the leisure society from us and handed it over to the economic royalists. In 1981, the royalists went right to work, taking down that first pillar on which FDR rebuilt the American middle class, progressive taxation. Taking advantage of the oil shock crisis, neoliberal shock troopers immediately ushered through a revolutionary change in the tax code with the Economic Recovery Act of 1981. The first major piece of legislation signed by Reagan has slashed the top marginal income tax rate from 70% to 50%, cutting estate taxes for wealthy businesses and slashing capital gains and corporate profit taxes. Reagan succeeded a few years later in dropping the top income tax rate even more to 28%, where it hadn't been since the Great Depression. It was the second largest tax cut in history, and it was nearly identical to the largest tax cut ever, Treasury Secretary Andrew Mellon's in the 1920s, the one that created the bubble known as the Roaring Twenties, which eventually burst in 1929. The great forgetting had certainly arrived. The economic mistakes of the 1920s were coming back around. And again, the influx of all this hot money in the market, coupled with a robust deregulation agenda throughout the 1980s and 90s, would trigger a series of painful financial panics. The reason why the leisure society could be imagined by Time magazine is because ever since 1900, working people's wages tracked evenly with working people's productivity. So as productivity continued to rise, which was likely due to increased automation and better technology, so too would everyone's wages. And the glue holding this logic together was the current top marginal income tax rate. In 1966, when the Time article was written, the top marginal income tax rate was 70%. And what that effectively did was encourage CEOs to keep more money in their businesses, to invest in new technology to pay their workers more, to hire new workers and expand. After all, what's the point of sucking millions and millions of dollars out of your business if it's going to be taxed at 70%? According to this line of reasoning, if businesses were to suddenly become more profitable and efficient thanks to automation, then that money would flow throughout the businesses, raising everyone's standard of living, increasing everyone's leisure time. But when Reagan dropped that top tax rate down to 28%, everything changed, as you can see in this graph. Now, as businesses became more profitable, there was a far greater incentive for CEOs to pull those profits out of the company and pocket them because they were suddenly paying an incredibly low tax rate. And that's exactly what they did. All those new profits, thanks to automation, that were supposed to go to everyone, giving us all higher paychecks and more time off, instead went to the top, to the economic royalists. Suddenly, the symmetry in the productivity wages chart broke down. Productivity continued increasing because technology continued improving, but wages stayed flat. And again, since higher and higher profits could be sucked out of the company and taxed at lower and lower levels, there was no incentive to reduce the number of hours everyone worked. In the 1950s, before that Time magazine article predicted the leisure society, before that article was written, the average American working in manufacturing put in about 42 hours of work a week. Today, the average American working in manufacturing puts in about 40 hours a week. This means that despite the fact that productivity has increased 400% since 1950, Americans are working, on average, only two fewer hours a week. If productivity is four times higher than in 1950, then Americans should be able to work four times less, or just 10 hours a week, to afford the same 1950s lifestyle when a family of four could get by on just one paycheck, own a home, own a car, put their kids through school, take a vacation every now and then, and retire comfortably. But all that was wiped out by Reaganomics and Ronald Reagan. And that's just the beginning of the setup for the crash of 2016.
Roger in Berkeley Springs, West Virginia. Hey, Roger, what's on your mind? Thank you for watching YouTube.
Hello, Mr. Hartman. I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
And that certainly was some call with Frank. But the reason I'm calling is earlier on your show, you had a gentleman that came on and used the term epistemic crisis.
Yes.
And you said you were unfamiliar with the term.
Yes.
And I believe that the word comes from epistemology, which is part of philosophy, and I believe it means knowing the truth. Basically that, you know, we have referees, so to speak, such as intellectuals and scientists and everything that people commonly refer to as knowing the truth, and that with the rise of right-wing media and the split in the media, that we are not dealing with the same facts anymore.
So it's a crisis of belief.
Right, right.
We're a crisis no driven by belief in things that aren't so.
Right, right. And it is that, you know, there is a lot of conspiracy theories on the right, the Pizzagate and all of that sort of thing.
Right.
And that that we are not dealing with the same facts anymore, and epistemology is knowing the truth.
Yeah.
So it is a case of and the other word I had it written down, but I misplaced it. But the other word had to do with deaths of despair crisis. That a lot of people that
despair?
There are a lot of deaths of despair. Yes.
Yeah.
That there are a lot of crises that way too. So those were the two terms that the gentleman was using.
Yeah, I think that was Dave from Federal Way. Yeah, thank you for that, Roger. And, you know, I look forward to Dave calling in later on, too, and kind of catching up on that. But and it's always nice to add words to my vocabulary. You know, I know epistemology, but that was a new one for me. Roger, thank you so much. Epistemic. Let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com and Ellen Ratner's new book, Loving What You Do. On the line with us is the chief foreign correspondent for Talk Media News, Luke Vargas. Joins us from New York. Luke produces a two-minute podcast every day that you can easily track down on the web. Luke, welcome back. Canada successfully rolled out a carbon tax this week. How come this isn't even in the American news?
I know. It's such a big deal. You know, when I think it's going to be in the news, unfortunately, as conservatives sweeps into power in New York, I'm sure that they will say that the reason that he lost is because he was embracing this crazy leftist environmentalist agenda. I think that's a very false attribution to his electoral fortune. Look, let's not even get into that part. It's important to talk about what's actually been done here.
Yeah.
So this is an interesting carbon tax, which is going to be basically levied on fuel retailers. So anyone who's buying energy, be it coal to run some sort of home heating, if it's natural gas, or if it's going to the gas pump to fill up your car, you're going to pay for the carbon emissions that are caused by those fossil fuel sources. It's going to start at about $20 a ton this year, which means probably about $2 more for a gas top up at the pump. If you've got a small car, I think about $3 if you have an SUV.
For a tank full.
Yes, to fill up your tank. And this is going to triple by 2022 when at the broad level, it's $50 right. per ton of CO2 by 2022.
Now, are they doing this where they rebate all that money to the consumers so that people can afford to pay for the gas, or are they, this going into the general fund?
So Canada is a provincial system, and so each state can decide to do this differently. As far as I understand it, in Quebec, for instance, most of this money is going to environmental spending at the state level, so whatever they think is a good way to, lower emissions. But in these four states that this was forced into practice yesterday, the money goes right back to people. So this is what you call a tax and dividend structure, and it's what a lot of environmental economists think has been a really good idea, because the goal and what's been so difficult with carbon pricing policies is that you need to disentangle climate policy, what's good for the environment, from all of these very politicized discussions about the size of government.
Right, and you don't want it hitting the average working person. I mean, this is the mistake that Macron made in France. This was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. We're going to do a carbon tax, but we're going to keep all the money.
Yes, exactly. One study that I saw in Canada says that about 70% of families, most of them on the lower percentage of household income, are actually going to make this per year. You're not like submitting receipts or counting up how much you're using. They basically just, you go in your tax rebate form and there's a line there that says, how many people are in your family. And depending on that number, you get money back. And
So this is like the Alaska Permanent Fund.
Talking to Gilbert Metcalf, who's at Tufts and just wrote a great book called Paying for Pollution. And he says this is really important because that sort of visual, carbon prices like this in the past have just sort of lowered taxes in exchange for the money that you're paying at the pump. But that's not visual enough that you actually want to see when you get your rebate, hey, here's like $400 back. And that actually reinforces good. And no one's going to be, you could spend all that money, I guess, on more gas, but most people aren't going to do that.
Sure.
If
it works, it could even be
neutral.
It could even be a small economic stimulus. I mean, it may end up, having a real silver lining to it. Meanwhile, the Saudis, this is on the front page of the Washington Post today. The Saudis are giving multi-million dollar houses and multi-thousand dollar a month payments to the four children of Jamal Khashoggi, the murdered Washington Post journalist. Is it working?
Well, it depends on what working is. I mean, one of the children wants to stay in Saudi Arabia in Jeddah, and the other three kids live in the United States and I think understandably don't want to go back to Saudi Arabia. The Saudis say, look, this is legitimate. This is what we do in this country. When people are the victims of crimes, we compensate them back. You don't usually talk about million-dollar homes. You don't usually talk about, as the Washington Post reports, a settlement in terms of tens of millions of dollars that they call blood money in the years to come. And I think it's also probably a ludicrous claim to say there's no attachments, sort of stipulations or speech that these people, that they have to, in exchange for taking this money, can't speak out against the kingdom. And I would say, just generally speaking, it's part of a pattern I think we've seen with Saudi Arabia that it tries to sort of pay off, violations of child soldiers in Yemen. They create a new, fund at the UN to research children in conflict, all these sorts of ways of trying to, distract from the core issue. It's just more of the same, I think.
Yeah, because they're sitting on more money than God, and so they can do this. The thing I thought was really interesting is that IPO of Aramco or whatever it was, this merger or sale, this enormous amount of money just went into the Saudi coffers, and they're using it to solarize the kingdom. I don't know if you saw that story.
I didn't. I guess that's one of the better things to do with that.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, they now have a goal of getting off fossil fuels, Saudi Arabia. It's incredible. Luke Vargas with Talk Media News. Thanks, Luke.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. Richard in Calumet, Michigan. Hey, Richard, what's on your mind today?
Well, I went on that website you had up here to find out where an event was happening in our area, and I think the nearest one is about 500 miles away.
Really? In Michigan?
Yeah, I'm up in the Keweenaw Peninsula.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The website, by the way, is Trump is not above the law.
Nothing makes it up here except for right-wing garbage.
Yeah.
Well,
you can start one.
We're in desperate shape.
You can start one. By the way, the website is TrumpIsNotAboveTheLaw.org.
Yep, and I looked at it and typed it in, and I'm trying to get people active. I talked to you guys, Free Speech's supervisor, and I worked out a deal of getting some stickers and some things to start putting up around up here because
cool.
My best friend is ahead of our Democratic Party, so...
That's great.
We're going to do what we can.
There you go. And TrumpIsNotAboveTheLaw.org. You can not only sign up for one, but you can also create one. Richard, good on you. Thanks for checking it out. Karen in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Hey, Karen, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. First-time caller.
Thank you, Karen.
Thank you for all you do.
You're welcome.
I just have a really simple message. Back to your mini rant about how Republicans turn their message to gain support from the voters.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the contract on America, Gingrich. My message is short and sweet to the Democrats. It's all about the marketing. That's all anything is about. Forget the issues. Forget the pro, the con, the this is right, that's wrong. It's all, I think Democrats should put all their money into a high-powered marketing firm and start bombarding the TV stations continuously.
Yeah. I, Karen, I absolutely understand what you're saying. And as a guy who has started and built and sold two different advertising agencies in his life, that's me, I agree. But here's the dynamic. This is, you know, this is the problem. Republicans have nothing to sell. Republicans are interested in tearing down our government. They want to strip it down to just the military and the police and do away with all this socialism stuff like, you know, Medicare and Social Security. And, you know, I mean, there are even Republicans who think we should privatize fire departments and public roads. So that's what they're about. And because they can't tell people that that's what they're about, I mean, they tell their rich donors that's what they're about, but they can't tell the average person that's what they're about, they have to turn to marketing. They have to use advertising and promotion. They have to have this slick packaging, you know, like with the Newt Gingrich and his contract on America or Nixon's secret plan, or now you got Trump's secret health care plan. They have to do that. Democrats, on the other hand, actually have substance. They're actually interested in governing and making the country work, and in fact, in making it work better for everybody, including rich people, strangely enough. And so the Democrats, coming out of this place of, you know, pure heart and decent intent and actual plans, actual policy, the Democrats think, well, that should be enough. It should be enough for people to look at the fact that, you know, we came up with this, you know, this 12-point plan, and here's all the details, and here's a, and the, so the Republicans are talking about benefits all day long. The Democrats are talking about features all day long. You have to have both in a marketing campaign. The benefits are what's in it for me. The features are what are the details. If you don't combine the two of those things, you don't have a high credibility sales pitch. And the Democrats don't get this. They always go for the features. They rarely talk about the benefits. The Republicans totally get it. They only talk about the benefits because they don't have any damn features.
Exactly.
So, anyhow, I used to teach this stuff. I mean, I was an instructor for the American Marketing Centers back in the late 70s. Yeah, it's been one of the things that just makes me tear my hair out when I look at Democratic campaigns. One of the people, by the way, who I think gets this, and increasingly this is spreading, was, you know, Bernie a couple of years ago. You know, he came out and he said, you know, here's the features, but let's talk about the benefits. Here's what's in it for you.
Yeah.
And the Progressive Caucus broadly gets that, and they're growing, and more of the candidates in this 2020 election, I'm not endorsing anybody. I think that we've got such a great field of people. I want to see how it shakes out. But increasingly, I'm hearing that kind of thing from them. Obviously, Elizabeth Warren, they're talking about benefits and features. I think that's a good thing. Karen, thank you for the call. We'll be back with more of the news and more of my thoughts and yours in this kind of national town hall meeting we have here every day on the Tom Hartman program. And in the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. Never was intended to be. It requires you. So get out there, get active, tag. You're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.